Meanwhile, I'm Duncan Strauss. I'm really glad to be bringing you another edition of Talking Animals, in which we'll speak with Ellen Jaffe Jones, author of Eat Vegan on $4 a Day, a game plan for the budget-conscious cook. First, though, as always, we're kicking off the show with an animal tune. This is Laura Veers with Little Lapdog Lullaby here on Talking Animals.
Come up, horsey, hey, hey, 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 mama's gonna buy him a little lapdog, mama's gonna buy him a little lapdog, mama's gonna buy him a little lapdog, gonna put him in his lap when she comes home. Come up, horsey.
That's Laura Veers from her new album with Little Lap Lullaby. Well, sorry, Little Lap Dog Lullaby. That's the animal part. What the heck am I thinking? An animal song leads us into today's edition of Talking Animals. My name's Duncan Strauss, here with our program that is devoted to all subjects in the animal kingdom. In just a few minutes, we'll be speaking with today's guest, Ellen Jaffe Jones, a personal trainer, running coach, cooking instructor, and author of Eat Vegan on $4 a Day, a game plan for the budget-conscious cook. A guide and cookbook that, since it was published this summer, has been selling like vegan hotcakes. Resident of Palm Beach, Florida, Ellen drastically changed her diet 30 years ago, part of a path that led her eventually to writing this book, which I thought the day before Thanksgiving would make for an interesting and timely discussion. So we'll discuss aspects of that life and the book and more when we speak with Ellen Jaffe Jones in a few moments here on Talking Animals. And as usual, we'll also welcome your questions and comments at 813-239-9663 or by email at dj@wmnf.org. Also, a bit later in the show, we'll step into the comedy corner, which involves animal comedy. We'll play Name That Animal Tune, and the winner will receive a copy of Ellen Jaffe Jones' book, Eat Vegan on $4 a Day. And we'll hear another animal song or two and more. Right now, though, it's time for the Animal News and Announcements segment, a look at items of interest in animal news, as well as announcements of local events on the horizon. And I'm chock full, since I wasn't here live last week. I got a big stack, some of which we'll get to later on in the show. But produced, as always, by the Talking Animals award-winning Rippenries News Department, our first item involves adoption. I mean, it's safe to say a recurring theme on this show is adopt, 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 rightly so. And we're always looking for interesting new ways to say it or do it. The other night, friends went to a Florida Panthers hockey game where there was also an adoption event going on. Nice twist on the old joke. Went to a pet adoption event and a hockey game broke out. The kicker, these friends adopted a puppy there. So, cool idea. Great way to hopefully spur yet more animal adoption. And in the 6 years, this very month, actually, that I've been doing Talking Animals on WMNF, my family and I have adopted several cats, one dog, an ultra-sweet girl being fostered at the time by WMNF's own Flea and his wife, Lauren, that in a burst of originality, we named Daisy. But we're branching out. We just adopted a horse. Anyone who follows me on Facebook knows this horse's name, Sir Jurley. He lived with us for a while earlier in the year. Gorgeous white horse with a bum ankle, and the condition looked kind of dicey there for a while. In fact, the prognosis was kind of grim, but he's rallied, he's healed, he can't really work or even be ridden much, so he's going to live at our place and just enjoy being a horse. Added bonus was a cute year-old horse Sir Jurley has been kind of mentoring, a cute, incredibly cute puppy-like guy named Dylan Delightful. And it seemed important to keep these two together for a while. So with two horses hanging there, things are kind of nutty in front of our house, mucking out the stalls, notwithstanding. So from the AP comes this story about Ohio, headline, Ohio's exotic animal ban is developing. A task force made up of state agencies and animal interest groups has developed a framework of a proposal that would ban many exotic animals in Ohio. Quote, it needs a lot of work before it goes to the legislation. It still needs a lot of work. I don't think we're where we need to be, says exotic animal owner Evelyn Shaw. Shaw loves exotic animals. She owns several large cats, including a cougar, and she volunteers at the Butternut Farms Wildcat Sanctuary. She's upset about a proposal that would put more bite into Ohio's exotic animal laws. Quote, this does not follow an exemption for sanctuaries. Sorry, does not allow an exemption for sanctuaries or USDA-licensed facilities. Those animals could likely face euthanasia or other things because there is nowhere for them to go. She thinks the proposal targets the wrong people. She says the private owners who follow the current restrictions are the ones who will be hurt the most. She says people who own these animals illegally would continue to do that even if a new law is put in place. Here's what the proposal says. There would be two phases. The first would give pet owners 60 days to comply with minimum standards, such as having the right fencing installed and cages with locks. Phase two is the ban. It would start January 1, 2014. This would be a total restriction, but zoos, circuses, and research facilities would be exempt. So we'll track that. This came from the Los Angeles Times blog. It says conservationists won a major battle Tuesday in their campaign to protect Yellowstone grizzly bears when a federal appeals court ruled that the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service erred in removing Endangered Species Act protection for, quote, one of the American West's most iconic wild animals. The ruling by the U.S. Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals struck down the Wildlife Agency's 2007 decision to remove the threatened, quote-unquote, designation for the bears under the Endangered Species Act. Tuesday's ruling cited climate change as having accelerated a beetle infestation, destroying the bear's vital white park pine food source. The grizzly is the second wildlife species after the polar bear to earn protection and recognition of harm caused by global warming. Both are considered threatened. More locally, the Hillsborough Animal County Services is asking the public's help for information about a shy Great Dane now in the care of the animal shelter, the county shelter. The young male was running stray and injured by a moving vehicle. The dog's owner has not come forward so far, and Animal Services is confident that this purebred pup is someone's missing pet. The large dog suffers from two broken legs and requires special surgery so that he can be adopted if the owner does not come forward. Animal Services reminds pet owners of the importance of pet identification, such as tags and microchips, over the busy holiday weekend. If you have any information about the dog or its owners, please contact the shelter at 813-744-5660 or email info@hillsboroughcounty.org. The After Hours message line is 813-744-5550. Also, right here locally, the 6th Annual Thanks Vegan Dinner is happening tomorrow, Thanksgiving Day, appropriately enough, from 1:30 to 5:30 p.m. It's being held at the Unitarian Universalist Church of Tampa, 11400 Morris Bridge Road. In terms of what to bring and how that affects costs and other details, go to TampaVegThanksgiving.com. And came from the Washington Post, I think, by way of the Associated Press. Animal advocates are trying to find out why someone apparently left dozens of rabbits along a road in Colorado Springs. Someone spotted the white bunny Sunday, and members of the Dream Power Animal Rescue and other people helped round them up. The Gazette reports that the Humane Society of the Pikes Peak region is investigating and offering a $500 reward for information in the case. Many of the bunnies went to animal shelters, but about 20 were taken home by people who helped rescue them. And this, too, comes from the Associated Press. Headline, McDonald's drops egg supplier over video. McDonald's Corporation said Friday it had dropped a Minnesota-based egg supplier after an animal rights group released an undercover video of operations at the egg producers' farms in three states. The video by Mercy for Animals shows what the group calls animal cruelty at five Sparrowbow Farms facilities in Iowa, Minnesota, and Colorado. Its images include a worker swinging a bird around by its feet, hens packed into cramped cages, male chicks being tossed into plastic bags to suffocate, and workers cutting off the tips of chicks' beaks. Quote, the behavior on tape is disturbing and completely unacceptable. McDonald's wants to assure our customers that we demand humane treatment of animals by our suppliers, Bob Langert, McDonald's Vice President for Sustainability, said. So as many people have pointed out in the ensuing days, you know, that's great, but where does McDonald's now go to get their eggs? Probably a similar kind of operation. So, you know, ended the association with Sparrowbow, but not with those kinds of egg suppliers. And I think lastly here for now, we'll get into some more of these later on, but I want to be sure to mention that it is not a crime, this just passed, to kill tiger and hammerhead sharks in the waters off Florida. In a unanimous vote following 2 years of spirited public hearings, the Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission decided last week to protect the tiger shark and three species of hammerheads from recreational and commercial anglers. Quote, sometimes the appropriate measures of conservation are the problems we avoid, not the problems we have to fix, Commissioner Brian Yablonsky said. The new measures, which will take effect on January 1st, also prohibit the possession, sale, and exchange of the sharks in state waters. Fins from hammerhead sharks are especially valued and used for shark fin soup. All right, so that's, like I say, going to do it for now for the Animal News and Announcements segment. We will hopefully come back to some later on in the show. Right now, let's step into the Talking Animals Comedy Corner, which involves animal-oriented comedy. We always do shorter pieces when our guest is in studio, as Ellen is today. So with a nod to Ellen, though, in her book, this is Shane Moss with a portion of a piece called Mushrooms Vegan on today's Comedy Corner on Talking Animals.
I have a friend who's a vegan, which is fine enough for him, but he's always trying to push his vegan propaganda on me. He'll be like, hey, Shane, you should try this tofu. It tastes just like chicken. I try it, I'm like, oh, wow. You forgot what chicken tastes like. In fact, everything tastes like chicken except for this.
All right. That was Shane Moss with a portion of a piece called Mushrooms Vegan, taken from his CD, Jokes to Make My Parents Proud. I'm Duncan Strauss. This is Talking Animals. Our website is talkinganimals.net. It's nearly time to speak with today's guest, Ellen Jaffe Jones. As I touched on earlier, Ellen is a personal trainer, running coach, cooking instructor, and author of Eat Vegan on $4 a Day, a game plan for the budget-conscious cook, which proved to be sufficiently popular that it quickly went to second printing. Ellen is a resident of Holmes Beach, Florida, known as the Veg Coach, and her book, Eat Vegan on $4 a Day, would certainly appear to counter the contention that it's expensive to eat vegan. And I just kind of like the idea of discussing vegan cooking and eating on the day before Thanksgiving. I'm a maverick that way, I guess. Anyways, with a reminder that we invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663 or emailing dj@wmnf.org. Let's welcome Ellen Jaffe Jones to Talking Animals. Good morning, Ellen.
Good morning, Duncan.
So happy to have you in studio. We rarely get guests in studio, so it's a real pleasure to be able to sit right across from our guest and have eye contact and all the normal conversational things. So
great,
thank
to be
you
here.
For doing
thank
it.
You.
So to provide a sort of a backdrop for much of the rest of our conversation, let's start with the sort of thing you must have counted dozens, if not hundreds of times by now, with the changes you made 30 years ago and why.
The initial change came the year I was 28. I almost died of a colon blockage. I was working as a television investigative reporter in St. Louis, my hometown. Did that for 18 years. And we had a snowstorm, and the station was catering food, if you can call it that. Highly processed, very salty meats. And I collapsed in the newsroom. They rushed me to the emergency room, and the doctors said they'd never seen a colon blockage that large in somebody my age, and I would need to be on medication the rest of my life. It was the same year my sister got breast cancer for the second time. And eventually, my mom, aunt, and both sisters went on to have breast cancer. So back then, 30 years ago, doctors were saying, you better do something with your life differently, kid, or you're going to end up like everybody else in your family.
And so that Who connected the dots for you? Did you connect the dots? Here's your own experience. Here's what's happening in your family. But back then, was there as much clear evidence to say, hey, well, ergo, I should change my diet and change it in these ways?
There was nothing. After that experience in the emergency room, I ran to the health food store and read all 5 books on fiber. That was all there was at the time.
Sure.
And I have really been focused on this, though, since my aunt died of breast cancer in our home when I was 5 years old. People have asked me how long you've been working on the book. Well, yeah, all my life.
Yeah, in a sense, right.
Trying to figure out how do I avoid this mess. Because we would congregate in hospital rooms and joke that this was our family reunion because people would come from all over the country to be with the person who was suffering from whatever medical malady was going on. Or we would joke, what hospital wing are we paying for with this particular illness?
Wow.
And after a while, I didn't find it very funny.
Sure. Well, with that in mind, and with all those people kind of rotating in, which, you know, sort of had a gallows humor, I guess, kind of a comedic edge to it, who else in your family followed suit, though? When you said, you know what, here's what I'm going to do about it. I'm going to change my diet. Did others follow suit in your family?
You are so funny. You are a comedian, aren't you?
Well, unintentionally sometimes, sadly.
You know that expression, a prophet is without honor in his or her own land? Well, suffice it to say, that's been my story. I mean, I've tried, as you can imagine. When my sister got breast cancer, I went to the health food store. I actually delivered groceries to her. And, you know, God love her. She said to me, look, this is my life. This is the way I want to lead it. And you don't have a right to tell me what to do. And that taught me a whole lot as I progressed forward and started teaching cooking classes for the national nonprofit, the Cancer Project. That was sort of my release, like, because those people were really listening. And I actually had a woman lose 120 pounds in 8 months after taking the class and just never counting a calorie, never being hungry, and loving the food. And I'm sorry, but you can make tofu taste like chicken. But she was also a multiple myeloma survivor, and her cancer markers improved so much that they released her from Moffitt, said, you know, you can just get your blood work monitored on your own. And I got a note from her on Facebook 6 years out. She says, I'm still doing great. My cancer markers are fine, and I'm still a raving vegan.
Wow. Okay. Well, there's a success story right there. So here we are 30 years later, and you said in an aside there that really all those 30 years were sort of preparation for the book. But still, I guess it does beg the question in a sense, like, why now? Why, well, not now, but if, you know, when you did actually write the book, probably within a year or so ago, why did you say, now I've got it, I'm going to put this down, I'm going to make a book that's going to help people in that way?
I'll get to that in a second, but I do just want to say that as a television investigative reporter, I covered puppy mills in Missouri, which is one of the worst states, still is. I covered the way animals were improperly disposed of in Miami, which those kinds of images really stuck with me. Then I interviewed doctors and registered dietitians over the years who, you know, as I started connecting the dots, it was like, aha, there's no money in broccoli. And I started coming to this reality as a woman who was faced with so much breast cancer. Doctors also told me to breastfeed long and often, and I took them so seriously that I actually became a La Leche League leader and trainer in Missouri. That's a breastfeeding information support group for those who don't know. And as any breastfeeding mother will tell you, this is just so much common sense that we are the only species that drinks milk from another species. And if you start drinking cow's milk, you are going to, things in your body like tumors are going to grow very quickly from small to large, as cow's milk is meant to make baby cows grow into ginormous cows in a fairly short order. So human milk is much more tailored toward making us grow more slowly and developing different parts of our body in ways that cow's milk does not. So that was affecting me. But really what did it for me is after I left 18 years in television, where I got 2 Emmys and the National Press Club Award, I became a financial consultant at Smith Barney for 5 years. Now, keep in mind, I was not one of those Wall Street folks who got a big bonus. I never made more than $20,000 a year once I was spun off from the initial training program. And I found that it was great training, though, for writing this book and learning about financial planning. So putting all the dots together for me personally, I was sitting there watching the news one morning, and I saw this 300-pound woman loading up her cart with Twinkies and macaroni and cheese, and the reporter stuck the microphone in front of her face, as I often used to do, and she said, you know, you just can't eat well on a budget. And I saw so many stories like that, but this one in particular, I just ran to the computer and started writing and putting the recipes together. I lived on the floors of big box stores like Walmart for 3 years, tracking prices as I did as a consumer reporter, tracking the consumer price index. And I put it all in on different Excel sheets over the months. As my iPhone technology developed, I tried scanning prices, but that didn't work as accurately as the old pen and paper.
Mm-hmm.
And then I entered it into a software program that actually factored the individual ingredients of recipes by cost. I would have to enter that cost, but if I put in a tablespoon or a cup of soy milk, it would know how much it would cost for that ingredient. So my recipe book is all full of priced out recipes. The original title, you'll be interested to know, was Eat Well on $3 a day. So that tells you how long I've been working on this.
Wow.
We had to up it to $4 because there was a little bit of inflation.
Sure, right.
But my whole thing is the price of beans just doesn't change that much over the course of the years that I've been tracking this. Price of dairy, price of milk, price of meat, through the roof.
So you worked on it long enough where you had to sort of upgrade or elevate the title figure a little bit. So along the way, when you were dutifully doing all this research and crunching those numbers, what sort of objectives did you have when you were working on it and writing the book, and like what sort of outcomes were you really hoping for once you sort of got to the finish line?
Never turn a former investigative reporter loose in Walmart with an iPhone.
Okay. All right. Well, that's a cautionary tale. That's not necessarily your story, but
well,
that's for others to be
aware. Well, it was my story.
Yeah.
I mean, I was doing it just because as I go around the country now, I have a slideshow, and I want to show people how cheap vegetables are. And as I stayed at Walmart, I was taking pictures of some of the food that would be in the frozen food aisle that was so much more expensive. I mean, keep in mind, my focus has been price. If you can show people how cheap it is to eat this way, I really feel like they're going to flood to the vegetarian or vegan table. But I would be catching pictures of people in these aisles who were weighing 300 pounds or more, and you couldn't tell the difference between the patients who were on the motorized vehicles and their caregivers. I mean, I just wanted to run up to them and say, you know, there's a great bargain on beans a couple aisles over. So really, as my publisher has talked to me about it, I'm really going for the Walmart crowd, people who would never think of eating vegan. And, you know, the original title was Eat Well, and I wanted to reach the broader audience. I didn't think that people at Walmart would really embrace the term vegan. And then something beautiful happened. Bill Clinton came out of the
mm-hmm.
closet about
yeah.
his eating vegan and how it saved him from a third bypass surgery and a third stent. And this is the story now of why so many people are looking at this. But when I worked at Smith Barney, one of the things that I thought was interesting, I focused on socially responsible investing, which means providing for clients, companies that don't invest in tobacco, alcohol, and firearms. And for a smaller subset, people don't want companies that test on animals. And in my dealing with that, I found that companies didn't really care about the environment until you could show them how they could save money by not only recycling their own company's cans, but other companies' cans. And that was my focus with this book. If you can show people that the cost of beans, an equal serving of beans, is 1/6 the price of an equal serving of the cheapest, most disgusting form of hamburger meat, which is 30% fat, then they'll be rushing to the table. You know, I don't expect that everybody's going to go, oh, yes, I want to be vegan. But if you can replace 2 or 3 meals a week over the course of a week and the course of your lifetime, you're going to be saving some significant money if you add up 50 cents at every serving or every meal per family member. So that's really where the savings comes in.
So in the time then since the, I guess it's been about, what, 5-6 months probably that the book has been, I think it came out in June or so or thereabouts.
Right.
Yeah. So in what way have the sort of your objectives and those outcomes been met, and in what ways have they either spun in a different direction or kind of, you know, fallen a little bit short of what you had hoped for?
Well, my publisher has been blown away. This has been their number one seller pretty much since the floodgates opened. And again, it's the economy. It is the economy. People are looking for ways to eat healthfully on a budget. And the reality is, and I talk about this when I talk all over the country and show slides to this effect, that one out of six Americans are living below the national poverty level, which is $22,000 a year income for a family of four. So as I often say and kind of joke, you know, we may all be eating vegan in 10 years, whether we want to or not, because there's actually a case, I don't know if you heard about this, but a prison is getting sued by inmates because they took out the meat and replaced it with soy, and the prisoners are going, oh no, this is not healthy, we're going to get sick and die. Guess what? My book is also about how much money you save by avoiding the hospital. The cost of a bypass surgery in the United States is between $100,000 and $200,000. Now, if you, as we say in financial services, dollar cost average that bypass surgery over the course of your lifetime and all the hamburgers you eat, that $5 restaurant hamburger may be more like $1,000. So I want people to think about how much money is being spent on health care as a result of our poor food choices. Now, whether the government pays for it, you and I pay for it, an insurance company pays for it, preventable diseases are not sustainable.
So, okay, so Ellen, I mean, one of the things that that really makes me wonder about is you know, as we talked about before we came on the air, I've been doing this show, you know, a number of years, and one of the things I've sort of become more and more interested over that time when there's a book, you know, somewhat related to yours, of course your book is singular, but I just mean, you know, in that sort of topic area, is the reception it gets when not just preaching to the converted, but when preaching to the not converted or not yet converted. I mean, you said this is sort of aimed, for example, at the Walmart crowd. I mean, what has been your experience of how much that's actually connected with the non-converted and or the Walmart crowd?
Well, the real key for me, because of my media background, is getting as much exposure as I can. A few weeks ago, I was on the cover of the St. Pete Times Weekend magazine, and I got a lot of book orders on my website, vegcoach.com, after that. So these come in spurts, and my publisher, like I said, they are just so delighted with the way things have gone. They've already talked to me, and we've agreed on a working title for the next book. So that kind of thing I know. I've been told by other authors that where my book has placed on Amazon just doesn't happen. I mean, for a while, it was in the top 20 of all vegetarian books. It was staying under 200 in all of the books on Amazon, and other authors from my publisher have said, do you understand, I've never had a book go under 100,000 on Amazon. So I try and keep these things in perspective. My publisher has also asked me to coach other authors about building a social media presence, because that's one of the other things that I've done very successfully with this, as I tried to learn, well, how do you get and stay published in today's world?
Mm-hmm.
It's a very different world. I mean, the land of going on book tours, that is pretty much over. I mean, I'm doing the major book festivals and food festivals like Boston, Toronto. I'll be doing New York in the spring.
And, of course, you did Tampa here in
early
October.
Orlando, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I love doing that. Because, you know, I like engaging with people and trying to show them as a role model. I mean, I do 5K races. I'm wearing my Run Through Hell t-shirt, which was over at Al Lopez Park this past summer. And, you know, I placed in my age group for 5Ks. I did my first marathon last year and was the fifth oldest woman to finish the Palm Beaches Marathon. So, you know, those kinds of things, by being a role model and getting out there. I know I'm going to be on Ellen one of these days.
Mm-hmm.
I keep spamming her website on Facebook, you know, hoping,
sure,
sending in my proposal. Please, you really need to have me on your show. So you just keep playing in traffic, as we used to say. It's
sure.
Corny.
Yeah. Well, this is Talking Animals. If you just tuned in, we're speaking with Ellen Jaffe Jones, whose book is Eat Vegan on $4 a Day. If you'd like to join the conversation, ask Ellen a question, offer a comment, please call 813-239-9663 or email dj@wmnf.org. Now, before I get back to some of the other questions, it's just interesting the responses that people, you know, the things elicit here. So this came in a couple of minutes ago, an email that the subject heading was quote unquote breastfeeding. And it says simply, please consider the use of the word nursing instead of breastfeeding. The former is the act of a mother nourishing her child. The latter is a language dissection, something to consider. So
it's interesting, if I may just branch off on that for a short second. I was actually the associate coordinator of leader accreditation in Missouri for a period of years when I was very involved with La Leche League. And they were really adamant that we use breastfeeding versus nursing, because breastfeeding is the more anatomically correct term of what it is. And, you know, nursing is sort of a euphemistic word that came about as women were embarrassed to say, oh, I'm breastfeeding my child. So that's sort of the politically correct spin on that, if you will. I appreciate the comment.
Yeah. Well, it's just interesting. So, well, anyways, but again, we welcome more comments at dj@wmnf.org or again at 813-239-9663. So, earlier, Alan, when you were talking and I asked what other family members had embraced your decision, and your response to that was asking if I indeed was a comedian. So I assume that even now, all these years later, has that largely been the case, or what's the scorecard now with the family and the more immediate family?
One cousin. She came and visited me for about a week, about 4 or 5 years ago, and she adopted a vegan diet. I gave her my favorite resources at the time, and she has lost a tremendous amount of weight. She looks great. Some of her relatives, she said, were complaining that she was too thin. And as I pointed out to her, that in our culture, we're used to seeing 300-pound people at the beach. That is our norm. When you go to other cultures of the world where they don't have access to meat and dairy and their weights are much lighter and they don't have our diseases at all until they adopt a Western diet, their weights are what I would consider to be more normal. And many of the doctors who have either I have worked with over the years or they've written cover endorsements for my book, like Dr. Neil Barnard and T. Colin Campbell, also write about this in their books too, that what we consider to be normal in this country is somewhat skewed. Another thing I wanted to mention, you ask why I took this focus. I'll tell you why. The real reason is that when I worked as long as I did in television news, the only time PETA or animal rights groups got coverage was when they did something crazy, outrageous, like take off their clothes or, you know, block traffic somewhere. And I really felt it was important to take this more mainstream approach. I think more people are willing to listen to, hey, it saves you a lot of money. Everybody mm-hmm. cares about what's in their wallet, and it can save your life as well.
Cool. Well, so just to follow up, though, I just think it's interesting in a few ways that some members, obviously, of your immediate family haven't embraced the vegan diet life. So that's been such a pivotal part of your life and the reasons that you made that change. So given that the impetus really was, hey, I want to stay healthy. I want to beat the odds of my immediate family and others. And what are your thoughts on, for example, your daughters, not following suit? Not that you'd be myth like, hey, I'm an expert and how come you're not following, but just concerned as a mom that they're not kind of following suit.
Well, that's really a whole nother story as far as my kids go, and I'll get back there. But with Dr. Barnard and a number of other doctors who have written books, it's interesting, especially Dr. Barnard makes a big deal about how he was the youngest of three boys. I'm the youngest of three girls, and there's a 9 and 11-year age difference. So my kids are the age of my sister's kids, grandkids. So it's really a whole different way, and I've just learned that you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink. Mm-hmm. And I just try and live my life by example. My kids are still relatively young. I am hopeful. But again, I also came out of a divorce situation, and food, as it often is, even in healthy families, was very much a political football and was an issue. And so without going there too much, just suffice it to say, I am hopeful that, you know, they still have another 10 years before they reach full adulthood, and they'll think, wow, this is kind of cool. Maybe mom was right about one or
so
two things.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, cool. Well, let's see. There's someone here. Hi, you're on Talking Animals. A question for Ellen?
Yeah, my name's Rich from Tampa.
Hi, Rich.
Yeah, hi. What did Glenn Campbell say on that, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't, he says you can lead a horse to water, but if you can get him to lie on his back and float, you got something. I don't know exactly how that works.
Okay.
I also wonder if you ever, anyone's ever suggested to you about getting Mo Rock on your show and having a conversation between you and Mo, because your voices are similar. It's like you could be long-lost brothers or something.
Okay, real quick, but, Rich, so did you have a question for Ellen? Because we don't have time okay.
Sorry. Okay, yeah, I've got a friend that says when you switch from flesh to vegan, be careful about the transition. I suppose you cover that in your book, don't you?
Good question. I do talk about transition and transition foods. In terms of being careful, most people really find, and I've taught cooking classes for the better part of 6 years, I've never had anybody say that they had any particular negative events. What can happen, there is a transition period if you go raw vegan. People talk about that a lot. And my experience, again, in doing cooking classes, we stay with both cooked and raw. I have a whole chapter in my book on salads, a whole chapter on salad dressings, because I think it's important for people to find a salad dressing or two that they'll put on salad so they'll eat those green leafy vegetables. So, yes, there can be a transition period where your body does adjust. But when you think about if you ever drank whole milk and then you went to skim milk, it was kind of blue and thin and yucky, and then you went back a few weeks later to tasting whole milk and it tastes like sludge and disgusting stuff. So it's the same way with your taste buds or any habit. It takes about 3 weeks to change. One of the things that's interesting that I have found in talking about improved health is I did a 5K a couple weeks ago, and it was a new course, and I hit a speed bump that I didn't see. And this is the remainder of my elbow that I'm showing Duncan here, trying not to gross him out too much before lunch.
Well, but it's a serious scar and scab, that's
I
for sure.
I fell flat on my face. They called EMS, and I've never not finished a 5K in 30 years of running. So I got up, and I said, you know, I don't have time to wait for the ambulance. I'll see him at the finish line. And I finished second in my age group. But the point is, people were astounded, A, that I didn't bruise, and B, that I didn't break any bones. The thing about osteoporosis in this country, it's the highest that we have anywhere in the world, and yet we drink the most amount of milk. What is wrong with this picture? The calcium that is in green leafy vegetables is very bioavailable, very absorbable. So my thought is, if I didn't break bones now, I'm never breaking them. I actually was diagnosed with osteopenia before I totally converted to a vegan diet about 6 years ago. So I have reversed it, and if I didn't break on that concrete, I never will. The discussions I've seen about osteoporosis is that we ought to be more concerned with how much our risk is of fracturing versus how porous our bones are. And so that's just a whole another interesting sidebar to this debate. What are we supposed to be eating? In my book, I say, you know, what did our ancestors do? What does Mother Nature intend? We have 90 different fruits and vegetables that are so colorful out there. Mother Nature really wanted to make sure we would eat a few of them.
And absolutely, Rich, thank you for your question. And that kind of Rich's question sort of brings me to, I guess, a slightly broader question, which is I do think people have a lot of sort of ideas and sort of maybe various myths and misconceptions floating around in their head. What would you say are sort of the biggest misconceptions about vegans and how vegans eat?
Myth number one, where do you get your protein? Okay, Duncan. There it is.
That's quite a muscle.
Like,
she's flexing.
Protein.
Let the record show. Yeah.
You know, people say, how can you do all these athletic things and get enough protein? Well, there's plenty, again, of bioavailable protein in beans and even in greens and nuts and seeds, of course. So if you are exercising enough, the nuts and the seeds will get nicely digested and hopefully not go onto your hips and other places where women tend to collect fat when they are older. But eating fat in its natural state and bioavailable forms is very important. Another misconception is that you don't have enough strength, enough energy. And again, I point to my own record. I have lots of pictures on my website, both vegcoach.com and also my Facebook pages. I even have a Facebook page called Vegan Athletes, just to put out there that, yes, we can do wonderful things on a plant-based diet. And what's interesting is when you place in your age group, usually there's a first, second, and third place. And so they'll take pictures at the end, and all of the other winners in the age group are standing there. And when I'm standing next to the two other runners who are most likely not vegan, I'm the one who looks like I've been eating meat all my life with, you know, I have lots of muscle definition, and yet the people on either side of me look a little wasted. So I'm thinking maybe more runners ought to be eating a plant-based diet. Just
okay,
saying.
Okay, there you go. All right, well, let's take another call. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Ellen Jaffe Jones.
Hello.
Hello, it's you.
Yes. I've heard that vitamin B12 cannot be gotten without an animal source of protein in it. Is that true?
Thank you very much for your question, Ellen.
Great question. And when I teach cooking classes and all the books that are out there, B12 is the only supplement you need to take if you are full-fledged vegan. The reason is B12 used to be on our vegetables, but we wash our vegetables now. It used to be more in our soil. Our soil has changed. It's not so prevalent. But go to your doctor's office, and you'll see more animal eaters there getting B12 shots than plant-based eaters. B12, especially as you age, is more and more difficult for everybody to absorb. So that's the only thing, that's the only supplement that I take, you know, making sure that I get a well-balanced vegan diet. I mean, there's a couple of stories every once in a while that surface, you know, parents fed their baby a vegan diet and the baby died. Well, when you look at it at 6 months old, they were giving it soy milk and bananas. You know, that's not a healthy diet of any kind. And to put a label on it, whether it's meat or vegan, is really not fair when reporters do their job of covering these kinds of stories.
And maybe to follow up her question, is there anything else other than the B12 that anyone who's sort of thinking about embracing a vegan diet should be aware of? Is there anything else that they can't get from a properly constructed vegan diet?
The general answer is no, especially if you're looking at this long term. If you're going back and forth between a non-vegan diet and a vegan diet, then you'll probably be covering most of the bases. But here's what you get on a plant-based diet is a whole lot of fiber. In the U.S., our fiber content is maybe on a daily basis 15 to 20 grams. On a plant-based diet, it's 40 to 60 grams, and hence that is how I cured myself of a colon blockage and the related issues. You can do, a concern is omega-3s, but if you are getting enough seeds, different kinds of seeds, you're going to be getting the omega-3s. And other than that, nothing.
Great. All right. Well, gosh, we're hurtling towards the end of our time somehow, but we've got other folks want to speak with Ellen by phone. I have other questions. I'm going to have to sort of dump some of my questions overboard, I can tell already. But one of the things I just want to skip ahead to, I guess, as you know, Ellen, one of the reasons I invited you on the show today is, as I mentioned earlier, I just thought it'd be kind of, you know, sort of slightly rogue but interesting timing to have this kind of conversation the day before Thanksgiving. You know, amidst all the articles and blog posts and TV segments and more about ways to cook and deep fry and carb a turkey. In fact, driving over here, NPR's Morning Edition had kind of a, you know, kind of fun, interesting segment with Steve Inskeep and that guy Chris Kimball, the America's Test Kitchen. And again, it was about the whole meal, not just about the turkey. But with all that said, what will Thanksgiving look like for you tomorrow? Are you cooking? What's on the menu?
Well, my husband and I, and my husband is not vegetarian even, so we have a mixed marriage, which is always challenging, but he totally supports what I do, especially since I saved myself from a hysterectomy a few years ago when I went totally vegan, but that's a whole nother story. The answer to your question is we belong to the Manatee Sailing Association. We are planning to park it out in the middle of somewhere near the Skyway Bridge, near Terracea, and we will raft up, and I am the token vegan. I bring all my stuff so I know I can eat well, and of course now members of the Sailing Association have all bought my book, so they are now saying that they have changed their ways of eating. So you ask about success, that's how I define it, but I'll be bringing my my pumpkin or sweet potato muffins. I have the recipe for that. I'll probably be bringing a chocolate mousse. I like desserts, as you can tell.
Yeah, great.
An alternative pumpkin pie, which is made with tofu and quite yummy. And, of course, the traditional tofurkey, which you can pick up at the grocery store now. This stuff is so mainstream. I personally don't eat a lot of transitional foods, but if that's what helps you convert to eating a more plant-based diet, go eat the hot dogs and all that kind of nasty stuff that is very highly processed.
Wow.
But, you know,
this is so unlike you, Ellen.
I'm talking about the soy-based
yeah,
hot dogs,
I understand.
Of course, to be clear.
I understand.
In case
yeah. No,
this gets edited
somewhere.
Just
the disdain you hold for those things I just find interesting. But anyways, and on a related note, I guess I should just sort of mention one more time, as I did earlier in the show, that there's also, as another alternative for people who might want to check this out or take a step in this direction, there's the 6th Annual Thanks Vegan Dinner from 1:30 to 5:30 tomorrow at the Unitarian Universalist Church of Tampa. And for all the information, what to bring, how it would work, what you would pay, what you wouldn't pay, just go to TampaVegThanksgiving.com. So, okay, let's try it out, this one. Hi, you've been holding a long time. You're on Talking Animals with Ellen Jaffe Jones.
Yeah, I'd just like to say, when people ask me about vegetarians, I say, well, the biggest animals on Earth are vegetarians, like elephants and a lot of the cattle and then some of the fastest antelope. So, I mean, I think that there's a real weak excuse that you have to eat meat at all.
Okay, well, thanks. You have sort of a rough cell connection, but thank you so much for your call. I appreciate that.
Sure.
That's so true. There are a lot of pictures going around on Facebook now of people constructing these pictures like of a big gorilla and then the caption underneath it. So you want to talk about where I get my protein. You know, it's just amazing how many large animals out there are vegans. Hello.
Right. Well, so let me let people know, speaking of that, that this is Talking Animals on Duncan's Trust. We're speaking with Ellen Jaffe Jones, whose book is Eat Vegan on $4 a Day. We're sort of in our final moment or two, but we have some callers, and if you have a quick call or email at dj@wmnf.org, we may or may not be able to get to you. But right now, hi, you're on Talking Animals with Ellen Jaffe Jones.
Hi, did you mention that, did you guys mention that Oprah's real big on vegan this week, and she's got everybody there, and she had a visit the slaughterhouse yesterday and everything. She's totally gung-ho vegan this week on her channel.
Thank you for pointing that out. And we're just waiting for her to actually announce that she is vegan.
Oh!
I'm just, you know, wishing that. But Ellen, of course, Ellen DeGeneres has been a huge supporter of eating vegan and has a lot of different resources on her webpage and different pages for trying to focus if you want to find support. And what is so cool about the internet is there are wonderful lines of support. If you don't have that in your family, as I did not, you can find this community online in so many different ways. It's so much easier to go veg now than it was when I started doing this 30 years ago and had to order bread. Yeah.
Okay, well,
thank you.
Thanks very much for your call. Appreciate it. So, but I mean, as you mentioned earlier, I mean, the attention that, that Bill Clinton's, sort of conversion, or at least largely conversion, brought a lot of attention to it. Of course, the programs that Oprah did, now Ellen's kind of taken the mantle, and that all, I think, helps, you know, bring those kinds of conversations or those ideas, you know, more to not just the Walmart audience you mentioned, but, you know, just a broader, more mainstream audience. So Ellen, we have maybe just a minute or so left. I guess I want to ask, at the risk of asking, you know, which of your children is your favorite, what is the best recipe or your favorite recipe if you're on the spot to name one from your book?
Well, if I had to pick the chocolate mousse, just because I had chocolate mousse at a wedding, my wedding, a long time ago, and it was the heavy cream stuff. So you know that I have loved chocolate mousse all my life. And chocolate is a great antioxidant, and what is fun about this recipe is that you can serve it at a party, and nobody ever knows it's vegan, and then, you know, as the guests are leaving, you hand out the recipe, and they go, what? So my goal, of course, is to convert a lot of people, just in a nice way. You know why? Because I was older when I had children, and by the time I had kids, my parents were so sick they couldn't pick up my kids, let alone babysit them. And entire generations are losing because of poor health choices. And if the whole thing holds that it's survival of the fittest, you know, at the end of the day, it may be those of us who are spending more money, perhaps, trying to stay fit, because it does take some money to have a good exercise program if you aren't just running on the beach like I am. But, you know, it takes a lot of work and dedication to have a healthy lifestyle. But this is not rocket science, and if people just get educated what they can do about making some simple changes, even if they don't want to do it full time, it really is a great way to increase your health and be around for the grandkids. That's what Bill Clinton said. That's what got him to his epiphany, was saying, as Chelsea got married, his daughter, I want to be there for the grandkids.
Yeah, well, whatever kind of is the key motivation to get there. And just so, since we are just now almost over time, one of the things I didn't get to among many is Mark Bittman, I thought, had a really good column, as he often does, in New York Times on Sunday. There's a lot of cool things he's thankful for, and including sort of in his summary, he says, anyone who cooks, and especially anyone who teaches others to cook. And there's a lot of other nice items in that, so you might want to check that out online if you can find it. So, Ellen, well, gosh, thank you so much. This has been Ellen Jaffe Jones. Her book is Eat Vegan on $4 a Day. The full title is then with the subtitle, A Game Plan for the Budget-Conscious Cook. And her website is vegcoach.com. You can find her a couple different places, at least maybe more now, on Facebook. And thanks so much for joining us today on Talking Animals.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. All right, I'm Duncan Strauss. You're listening to Talking Animals, where the show website is talkinganimals.net. It's time to proceed to name that animal tune. There'll be a prize, a copy of Ellen's book, Eat Vegan on $4 a Day, that she was nice enough to donate for this purposes. To the first person who calls 813-239-9663 and correctly identifies this animal tune. One clue, it's hooked to Flea's wildly ambitious three-night WMNF tribute to David Bowie, January 6th, 7th, and 8th. First night, St. Pete. Second night, Tampa. Third night, Sarasota. It's named an animal tune on Talking Animals. A few folks calling in. Let's take them in the order they came. Hi. You're on Talking Animals. Can you name that animal tune?
No, I wish I could.
Okay. You just called to say you couldn't name that animal tune?
That should almost get
you a prize of some kind.
I want to try because I wanted the book, but...
Okay.
Think of it. All right, bye.
All right, thanks. Hi, you're on Talking Animals. Can you name that animal tune?
Pet people.
That's right. Who's this? What's your first name, sir?
My name is Dave.
Dave? Okay, Dave. That is correct. It's Cat People. David Bowie. So we'll put you back on hold. You are our winner of a copy of Ellen Jaffe Jones' book, Eat Vegan, on $4 a day. Congratulations. Thanks for listening.
Thank you.
All right. We do have a winner, folks. And if you're on hold and you think you heard me talking to you, it was only Dave. Okay? It was only Dave. There's some weird technological thing that happens where people think, hey, I won, even though I didn't speak to them. Okay, one or two quick announcements. This is from other events coming up. There's the Fun for All Ball benefit for Big Cat Rescue coming up Sunday, December 11th at Skipper Smokehouse. Doors open at 3 p.m. First band starts at 4. There'll be raffles, live painting, Fun for All. Bands include Sunset Bridge, Human Condition, Skull and Bone Band, and others. So there's that. And also every first Monday of the month, Clearwater Audubon hosts a guest speaker this month, Kay Meyer from the University of Florida Avian Research and Conservation Institute will discuss the impact of climate change on birds. She's a member of the committee to prepare the 2012 climate change resolution. This is a seminal topic, and we are fortunate to have Ken, they say, here to bring us up to date on where our bird populations stand. We hope you join us for this educational evening. Remember that Clearwater Audubon also hosts monthly field trips in and around Pinellas County. Go to clearwateraudubon.com. All right, we have just about reached the end of today's edition of Talking Animals. We'll be back next Wednesday, November 30th, when our guest will be Meryl Marco, the New York Times bestselling author of 8 books, many of which prominently feature dogs, including the new book Cool, Calm, and Contentious. And she's also an Emmy-winning TV writer who was the first head writer on the very first Letterman show's created Stupid Pet Tricks. That's next Wednesday on Talking Animals. I hope you'll join us then. I also hope you'll visit our website, talkinganimals.net, where we make available all sorts of information as well as archives and podcasts of past Talking Animals programs. We also have a link to the Talking Animals Facebook page, Twitter feed, and more. That's all found at talkinganimals.net. Talking Animals broadcast outreach consultant is Libby McKenna, who's in the studio today, shooting some video of our interview with Ellen, so we'll later upload that to the Talking Animals YouTube channel. My thanks to her, as always. I'm Duncan Strauss. Thanks very much for listening. And whatever you'll be eating tomorrow, I wish you a very happy Thanksgiving. And as always, have a good week. Be kind to animals. Be kind to others. Be kind to yourself. Stay tuned for the fabulous Scott Elliott with the All Souls version of It's the Music, airing from noon momentarily to 3 p.m. We're closing out today's show, as always, with an animal tune. This one from a local band we love. It's new music from the Ditch Flowers with In Bird's Eye. Taking us up to the NPR News and then Scott Elliott and his great, great show right here on WNF Tampa. We'll see you next Wednesday at 11 a.m. on Talking Animals.
In bird's eye, the days go and fly by. The river flow in slow-mo, the railroads in 8 shows. when I spy in bird's eye. Late, we're making our escape. You might call it fate, but old Mr. Sun keeps spreading new rumors. Birds are above you, the angels speak of you. They come close and nearby, the clouds cry when we climb high in bird's eye. Lost, we're counting out the cost, stars that we've crossed, and old Mr. Sun surveying the damage. Lost, the days of fire and frost, each second we've embossed, the crater tattooed on souls in full moon.
I'm Lakshmi Singh. The evening